You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Aloha.
And it's me, Brian. This week, we are covering anime that aired between the 24th of July and the 30th of July. We're recording it now in August, which means I had to move the calendar back one, and it momentarily confused me. Except with Bono Bono, which, of course, we are watching about 13 to 14 weeks behind. Gomachan is still missing in action.
I know, I'm worried.
I am.
I think it could have been, could it be done?
I don't know. That is a good question. I didn't investigate
it. It feels like that last one was like, well, here's a kind of heartfelt moment.
Yes.
Going to close out the series on.
But it didn't come back for many episodes.
It's done this to us before.
It
yeah.
has, yeah.
What sports event is on right now that government is sponsoring?
Is there like a specific Japanese only we're not noticing because it's not the Olympics or, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, let me do a quick check of the old the website, their own official website on NHK.
Is it whaling season when they go out and hunt whales for scientific purposes, the science of how bad they taste? Still, every year we hunt them and eat them.
It says it's airing till September.
Well, not every day. Every week, rather.
Oh, here we go. It says here, next broadcast, August the 5th, Saturday at 5:25.
But that's days away.
Secret Mother, apparently it's called.
Oh. That's more like a laughing salesman episode title.
It's just a repeat of that episode where her and Gomer find that money and go on a shopping spree.
Mom's Secret, wasn't it called? Yeah.
Yes. I don't know when the next new episode is. It may just be in repeats.
Maybe it is done. Oh no, we didn't give it the send-off we deserved.
We'll wait till we know for sure, I suppose.
Wait, I want to see your body before I make any decisions.
Well, anyway, so we must continue then with Bono Bono, episode 5, Something Terrible Will Happen, in which a perfectly good pun is ruined by the translation.
Yeah, isn't it like the day something terrible happens?
It's a pun around the word Thai hen.
Okay.
Because the characters, which Thai hen is like an all-purpose word for saying something terrible or awful or extreme or strongly, but when the characters it's based on separately mean like great change.
Okay.
So that's the punchline, is that the squirrel who wrote it was actually saying a great change is coming in 3 days.
Uh-huh.
Because he was talking about his child being born.
I thought he was initially like really something terrible is going to happen. Like he didn't want to be a father. And then when he saw the kid, he was just like, oh, I'm actually quite happy about the situation. I was interpreting it differently since I didn't get the joke.
No. Thankfully, somebody in the comments on Crunchyroll at least mentioned that it was about the use of terrible for Thai hen had ruined the joke. And then I looked up Thai hen and then I was like, oh, okay. And now I understand the joke. I think.
I feel like there's a way to make that pun work in English. Yes. But.
Except, of course, something terrible did happen. A mountain collapsed.
Coincidentally.
I was getting real vibes of the Lisa's Angel episode of The Simpsons, where we're all gathered on the hill. It's like the end will come at sundown.
My favourite joke, though, is the bit where Bono Bono suggests going to speak to Fishing Cat, and Raccoon and Chipmunk are having none of it.
Like, again,
fishing cat again. Yeah,
because I just like maybe the fact. Maybe
I'm yeah. yeah, it's like the playing with the playing. They know they've got a formula, and so now the characters are actually complaining about the formula.
But he never knows what's going on. Yeah, yeah.
And obviously
some gross jokes involving snot.
Yes, and the mountain collapsing is a callback to them wanting to see a mudslide in the previous episode.
I was worried for a second they were gathered under that tree with the giant rock in it. But I forgot that's the tree. The outro.
Yes. Is that the one? Is that the same tree which had got the glowing thing would come out of it?
I think so.
Every so often. I need a map at this point.
I'm sure one must exist at this stage, yeah.
But yeah, I was, apart from that joke being ruined by the translation, it was a good episode.
I think one of my favorite bits were chipmunks bet on their favorite objects, and neither of them want to win the bet because they're grossed out by each other's stuff.
Come on,
that's pretty good.
Yeah. And that snack joke was just, it was crude, but I still enjoyed it. But it was just,
I didn't like it as much the first time, but the second time was better.
You know? It's like the scene, like, you know, here at the massive rumbling, it's like Chipmunk goes, oh no, this guy's, you know, his face is just streaming with globs of fucking snacks and mucus. Oh my goodness.
Somehow playing the joke harder worked better, yeah.
Yeah. It seems like it's going to be a good lesson there. Like, well, obviously, like I say, but the translation, it may not have kind of fudge the details kind of there, but I kind of felt like when Bono was walking home, he sees like the squirrel family and their first child has been born. And I thought it was going to be some kind of lesson about, oh, well, maybe it's like a matter of perspective. No, something terrible might happen today, but something good happened today as well. But Bono takes it more as bad things happen all the time. We may not notice them.
More existential dread because it's Bono Bono.
Yes. If three people sneezed at the same time, none of them would know because they'd all be in different places.
It's just kind of weird when it comes to that lovely moment of that burgeoning family. Like, oh, there's sort of such happy news on this day when a terrible thing happened. You know, there's like hope in the chaos, but no. We are all of us doomed.
Right, on to the shortest episode, shortest thing which gives us the most difficulty in remembering what happened. Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 43, Magara Musso. I mainly remember a guy with a huge sword swinging it and taking dudes down and...
Yeah, they specify the length of the sword, but you can never see the whole lot of it on screen at once. It's that big.
Yeah, they reckon it's like almost 2 meters long.
Yeah, it was like 100 and something centimeters or 170, something. Yeah.
170 centimeters to 220 centimeters. So like over 2 meters long. It's a massive thing.
Yeah, I was looking up that type of sword and apparently they were just typically a meter long. But it's hard to tell because there was a law brought in later limiting the length of people's swords. So therefore there's not many surviving examples of that type of sword because they were all shortened to make them under legal length.
Oh, right. I thought it was one of those horse swords that you'll be able to when you're in the cavalry, because, you know, they have a big long thing that's kind of scythe down, like, guys as you're riding past them.
Yeah, but he's mostly spending the episode being badass and taking on Chidori one-on-one and doing quite well for himself. I like the bit where it looks like she throws, like, the kunai into his head.
Yes.
Yeah.
He flips his head back from leaning back, and it's like, this tastes like... I think this tastes like... shit or something. Yeah, yeah, I feel like that's what he says. And everyone's just like, why the fuck are you eating it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the big thing is fucking, what's his face?
Yeah, I was just going to look his name up, yes.
Masahaga Magahasa.
Matsunaga Hisahide.
He was sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Yes.
I wasn't going to betray you last week because I'm going to betray you this week.
Now, this time, when you're at your lowest, when you're at your most vulnerable, now is the best time to do it, the most poetic moment.
This was my plan. I wasn't going to ruin my sweet plan for doing it at the spur of the moment.
Yeah, because I got to do it now, because I have this cool guy move where I kind of ride forward slowly and just give you like the salute over my shoulder bone and saying, if you're lucky, we might meet again after this.
What a bastard.
Mm-hmm. And some other guy whose territory they're riding through, to return to the right into it, has risen up now with all these boys standing in their way.
Yeah, it's like, they've they've got them cut off at their escape route.
Because they're kind of like saying, oh, this would be exactly the worst place to be caught by those guys. And here we are. So cheerio. I'll have to make a note of those other guys next week because I'm sure they'll play a bigger part in next week's episode.
I may not be doing as well about remembering the names, but I can remember basically where they stand on the different sides of this conflict. And so I am getting like the flow of how the history went, at least, even though the names may escape me at times.
The last few episodes haven't been covering the large swaths of time that the other ones have, but it's kind of going through the different battle tactics now, which is I'm getting a good kind of sense of where people are, not just on what side they stand in relation to Nobunaga, but literally where they are on the battlefield, like how this is kind of set up. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it was mostly serious this time around, actually. I suppose things are heading that direction. So there's little room to... we can't make too many jokes out of guys getting caught in a printed movement and, like, hacked down by the opposing army.
What's his name? Is it Hideyoshi, the monkey dude?
Yes.
Yeah.
He looks practically heroic in this. It does that kind of fade to a painting thing with him. Yeah.
Okay, on to full-length things, and we'll start with Magical Circle Guru Guru, Episode 3, Battle on Saw Mountain. So, this is the first thing I watched, so I'm struggling to remember what happened. I know we get a flashback to when is it Kukari?
Yeah.
She's about eight years old and meets this girl, and I was like, hang on a minute, was this in the original series? It was. I'm not sure, but it might have been in a different position in the original series.
Right.
Apparently that other girl is a fan favourite character. And also, as I was learning this, I also discovered the nature of her, which is obvious if you think about her name and Kukari's name. Her name's like Iruku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. Like, okay, Kukari wanted a friend, and she met one.
Yes.
Conveniently.
Yes.
It also let out at the same time, well, not let out, but sneaks out at the exact same time at night as she does. It's like, okay, how about that?
Yep. Then we get the joke, we get back to the main story where they're defeating the boss, and they go back, and the joke which makes me want to run a Dungeons & Dragons campaign just so I can steal it.
Of them steal the boss with the fucking cheat sheets.
No, the statue they erected of them when they get back.
Oh, yes.
Okay, yeah, which, that's good to want too.
Yeah, it turns out to be their tombstone, which they've reconfigured to celebrate their victory.
Yeah, well, I like how they've prepared the banners and things set up either for a wake or a celebratory feast. So.
Look, very confident in them. And then they redo it so the other kids get into the statue as well, and then they head back.
it's so horribly just bolted on.
I like it because it's like it's an overnight job, and it looks like it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like the torso is growing out of like the middle of other torsos. It's like, oh, goodness.
Good enough.
I can't remember how they end up back at the castle, though.
Kukari, like, you know, she used a summoning spell and got that beastie out to just nuke the boss.
Oh, yeah, that weird fucking berserk-looking motherfucking thing, yeah.
That was good, but it's also terrifying. So I think, you know, I want to just go back a little bit and maybe learn a few more basic spells. So we'll go back to the old lady in the village, and it says, what are you talking about? I don't know what more spells. You can kind of squat in a quest and find them. And I think they go to... kind of local landmark that may have like a magical circle written in it, and actually a trapdoor or something in it. And it wind up underneath the castle, where there is a magical circle there. And the king, like the grand vizier, the head mage is there on the phone saying, oh, you've discovered our secrets, we can't let you leave now.
And he's been super creepy, so the king asks him to tone it down a little.
Yeah, and they get put in jail. It turns out the magical circle is for curing the king's, or relieving the king's piles.
Yeah.
Well, it's healing magic, but it happens to be where it's situated, you know, like...
It's
like
right under the throne. Under the throne room.
So whenever you sit in it, that's good. That's the stuff.
And they're broken out of jail by another wizard, who appears to be an adult, and produces snakes from her sleeves.
Mm.
And they end up discovering the vizier is a demon... And the king tries to make up with them, and they're kind of like, screw you, we're going.
Yeah.
With this lady, who, of course, Nikkei is fascinated with, because she's an adult woman. An attractive adult woman. We don't get a name, I don't think, this episode, do we?
I've forgotten about her, because it's been too long.
Yeah. Because I think, from what the wiki says, I think we'd know, because apparently there's a joke related to her name.
Mm. Yeah, it's one rollicking along. We got the end of one thing and the start and also end of another little bit of it. It's some true things. Like, I was comparing it in my head because we talked about how Maiden Abyss is kind of like the starting bit of a lush RPG, and it's sort of, you know, kind of slow, kind of creeping forward, you know, being very deliberate about its pacing, and then kind of comparison. Magical Circle Guru, which is deliberately about kind of video game RPG stuff.
Yeah, it's like a speed run of Dragon Quest or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you guys watch Maiden Abyss this week?
Yes.
Okay.
I did, against my better judgment, because goddamn it, Maiden Abyss, you literally cannot go two episodes without molesting a child.
So, like, it's all fine, and they're doing their escape run. Down into the just in the first level of the abyss. It's just by the end of it they get to the bottom, which means there'll be no. It's the kind of relief of they won't be chasing us after this point. And then they're like, oh yeah, that's because there are so many fucking deadly creatures at this level. Anyone chasing them would be basically being the hunted. So they're hunted by all the random monsters and such now. But during this, they have to go like, hey, let me check this robot has a wiener. Yep, sure does. And I'm like, fucking, we know that. You've established this already, show. Fucking, why do you have to do this again? It's not a good joke.
Why? The big bearded guy, and they assume he's out to pursue him and bring him back, but actually he was convinced by the other kids to go down and make sure that they'd got past the first level down to the second bit, which they wouldn't be followed after that.
Mm.
And then he literally picks up Rex, scruff for the neck, it starts rummaging around in front of his trousers. It's like...
One of the things that convinced him to help them was kind of like, oh, one of the kids is a robot, and he's like an ultra-level relic or whatever the hell. And it's like, yeah, but I think, like, his penis is probably, like, the least interesting part of him, considering, you know, the shooty, grabby rocket punch fucking thing he's got going.
Mm.
But no, let's just check and see if he has a dick.
Told you it was for creeps.
Yeah, and it sucks because, like, the rest of it is pretty good fucking world building, and I still like those parts, but that's really fucking thrown me off it, like.
Yeah, like, I'm loving just the backgrounds of it, those kind of mist cloud-shrouded cliffs, and...
You can see that the girl character in it, she's clearly, like, suffering the effects of the Abyss curse or whatever, because she seems to be, like, not feeling well as she goes further down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is the fucking deal with this, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of imagine something like, you know, like, you know, hike, you like ascend a mountain there, consider as you go up, maybe it's kind of a similar thing to that.
Mm, and the robot kid is talking about the interesting stuff, like, oh, you can't see all the way up because there's this field in it. It's actually much brighter in the abyss than it was, like, at the day when they descended. So whatever field is keeping you from looking up is actually enhancing the light as you go through.
Which
will probably the environment doesn't work based off rules we fucking understand, which is interesting. But you keep having to make those fucking jokes. It's weird, and I don't like it. And that was only one fucking thing. The rest of the episode was pretty great, but that one fucking thing really sours it. God damn it.
Are you pressing on against your better judgment, or are you...
I'm going to have to think about it. Do I want to get deeper into this shit?
Into the abyss.
You're kind of wondering, you know, like, now I know what's down there.
But surely they'll stop making child dick jokes, right? They have to at some stage.
Well, what's going to happen when they meet up with the third character?
And then
she has to know. Does this robot
have a dick? Let me check. Every character they come across has to fucking look. That's really like putting me off the whole endeavor. Would it be remiss of me to fucking like give it one more shot? And if they make another fucking kid date joke, just to stop.
I think it's something that maybe we won't quite mention it on Let's Go for a while. We'll just like
see if it continues.
Watch it in our own time.
And say then, the authorities don't find out.
That's that as well. Yeah. That is a worry.
Watch your own time. Maybe report back if you have episodes time, and then see if it's improved or not. Okay. And if it's no going at this currently, let's see if by episode 6, because we've had seems to be like every even numbered one, we've had something like this happen. If it doesn't in episode 6 again, then I think we have to, that's like once like once is just happenstance, second is coincidence, three times is a pattern. So
yeah, okay, that's fair.
I'm going to just like give it say that much. We'll report back in a few weeks' time with our findings.
I mean, like, maybe next time I watch it, I'll be like, no, I'm done right here and fucking now.
Possibly.
Yeah. See, again, like you were saying, Brian, I'd love to play like a campaign set in a place like this or play a video game or something in this kind of world, but without all the weird fucking shit you keep putting in. The setting's really interesting, but that's about it's really getting ruined by its own weirdness.
Talking of things which are weird and maybe get ruined. No, they don't. Never ruined by its own weirdness. It's improved by its own weirdness. Hey, but episode 42. We are screws. In which.
What's happening?
Okay, this week, the cat characters who've been in the background in the series up to this point, there's basically cat maids and cat robots who work in the palace. They overthrow the palace and take control of the country. Because they're mad that cats weren't included in the Chinese zodiac all those years ago. And so.
Yeah, but there's a tiger.
Yes, but normal cats aren't.
The other cat is, I think, because it was tricked by the rat.
Yes.
The feast is tomorrow or it's later, and the cat arrived late and it was locked out. Yes. They didn't get to go to the big party.
Yeah, this is all explained before the credits run on Haybot this week.
I've read Fruits Basket. I know what it's all about.
And so the six of the Zodiac Vokabots end up getting their bodies kidnapped, so they're just screws. And then somehow they end up as humans. And then it becomes a parody of Uta no Prince-sama, the boy idol anime. And then the episode ends. I watched it half asleep, and I'm not sure if being awake would have improved it any. I think it worked well as a fever, almost like a fever dream. Nothing in the plot was seemingly progressed.
Mm.
Right, onto things back to things we all watched. Welcome to the Ballroom, Heat 4. I forgot to write down what the episode was called.
Dancers High.
That's it. There. Boy, my Aeon Flux comparisons. I think that was a really good.
Yep.
A really good spot.
Like, he keeps... It did that zoom in into his head when he's dancing, like, super intensely. And it's like a fisheye lens type situation where his face is, like, peeling back and his eyes are looking different directions. And I was like, this is really weird right here.
There's some really good contortion. And it veers between very limited animation and dynamic actual animation. Yes. But it all seems to work.
Mm. Yeah.
I think partly because dancing is very sort of pose to pose anyway, so you can get away with that sort of pose to pose animation.
That's true, actually. I didn't consider that. Yeah.
Like, a lot of folks don't like it.
I understand why, but yeah.
So I wish it was sort of more kind of that way all the way through, but I understand as well, like, if you only have the limited time and then staff are able to do that kind of thing, then that's actually quite an elegant solution to overcome it.
Yeah. And I think it's, like you said, Brian, I think it still looks good for it. It's well paced between the movement and the kind of, when they kind of like suddenly stop, like it nearly goes into like slow motion with the stills kind of thing.
Yeah.
It works well.
I'll say the contortion in this episode goes beyond what we've seen so far. Particularly
because we're seeing some pros now.
Yes. Once he hits his dancers high and just basically goes berserk.
Like at one point, he's basically going like Super Saiyan because he's got fucking lines and shit.
And my favorite thing, though, is Sengoku continually making excuses for himself, as if to say.
Oh, blaming everyone else around him.
Yes, because it turns out his original plan was to get Hyodo suspended so he wouldn't go out and do the tango and hurt his legs some more. But then when he sees his passions ignited because of his Tatara taking his dance in the waltz, he's like, ah, no. He basically almost convinces himself this was his plan all along.
I meant to do this. That was motivated.
The other thing of like, oh, shit, I hope they didn't notice that fucking we're changed dancers because that's illegal. And the guy's like, well, I did something illegal. and he's panicking. And Sengoku's like, man, I can't believe you ruined his fucking thing. And he's been banned from dancing for 6 months all because of your crazy plan.
Your crazy plan that you went along with.
That I pushed you into and didn't explain that this is illegal.
That's the guy, officer. He was all his fault. Bailiffs arrest that man. Why is the ballroom of bailiffs? What's going on?
but you get to kind of see him get into a dance for once, and it's kind of like contrasting off his first getting on the dance floor thing where your man's actually enjoying what he's doing.
Yeah. Something I hope that gets addressed a little, not hopefully soon after this now, is that, like, I guess this is more about kind of Hyodo and him kind of reigniting his passion for that now, but it takes two to tango, as they say. Doesn't Shizuku get a say in any of this at all as well?
Yeah, I feel like it's just, and especially with the new guy who comes in, and maybe that's a plot that's going to be addressed, I feel like the partners, the ladies in this, are not, like, getting well. It's just like, oh, she's yours now. Hey, I'm taking her. That kind of thing. It's just like, they are people, you guys. They are skilled in their own right, but okay.
Like, she is a dancer, know the choreography as well. I think,
and the fact that she can react to someone making it up as he goes is impressive. No? Okay. Yeah,
so I hope they get addressed a little bit more as it goes on, because the way it kind of progresses now, where, like, Tatar is feeling bad about it, so he wants to go and meet Hyodo and apologize, and then he calls by his house and they have a little sort of meet up there, and they kind of two guys understanding each other, like, you know, like, your leg is busted, but I'll, like, compete for you and we'll be on a dance floor together in that kind of way. But, like, yeah, but you have not gonna be like each other's partners, like, you know, that would be fine. But you also have, like, another person who's involved in this bit as well. Those two open, like, deciding these things by yourselves, you know, like. That's, I know, that's kind of the sports anime narrative that kind of goes that way. Even though it's just, even in team sports shows, it's all about one. Yeah, this one guy, he's farming his dreams.
Yeah. And it's very much so focused on the guy's side of it at the moment. So
yeah, so that's why I quite like in Super 11, at least the original series, in that the main character is the goalkeeper. So it never really becomes
that is the guy who's on his own on the field. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he gets the dynamic saves, but he can't be the one who wins the match for them. He can prevent them losing.
Yeah.
So that works quite well for that. But yeah, this has got this situation. It is a bit like, you have to remember it is a shonen comic.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The boys are going to get more focus than the girls.
I'm just hoping the girls don't get thrown around like objects as they have been so far.
Well, I'm sure we'll get some of that next week. We'll probably get a better idea of those because we get the other female lead introduced at the end of this episode.
It was nice to see the guy who looks like your man from My Love Story.
Yes.
Is actually a very nice guy.
Yes.
And it wasn't him going like, oh, fuck, I watched him fall down the stairs and I was like, I think I can win this. It was like, oh, and then obviously I took him to the fucking medical thing. Yes.
That was a good,
because I'm not a monster.
That was a good expanding on a scene we saw last week. We should get on to another show which does something like that, which doesn't quite work so well later on. And at the end, it's Gaju Akagi and Mako Akagi are the two new characters who show up.
Oh, they're brother and sister.
They are brother and sister, yes.
Okay. Yeah, a ginger guy with a mullet and a kind of wallflower kind of girl.
Yes, who's telling Shizuku to run away. Get out of here.
This guy again.
Save yourself.
Which, you know, like, it doesn't maybe kind of bode well from a conservative there, because he's like, Shizuku, you must dance with me, I have to dance with you. But I hope it gets a little bit more about her and basically taking it to get the phone piss off.
I'm glad that the, what's your man's name who was the dancing the tango this episode?
Hyodo.
Hyodo is, I'm glad they're kind of doing some different things with him, because initially I thought, oh, he's full rival status after fucking this thing where he's like, give it back, and it's like, I'm going to dance my ass off. But because he like meets up with the guy later in his house and he's just nice, and it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to leave this to you, man. And he goes on the train and he gets on the wrong fucking train. Like, yeah. He's kind of a screw up, and he's not actually that much of a dick. It's just, and to kind of see the passion awaken in him as well. Like how's that going to change what he does? He's a little more than a one note kind of a rival character.
Yeah, he's kind of, you kind of see that he, in his own way, he's as awkward as Totara is.
Yes,
but
exactly.
Totara's awkwardness in this episode is pretty great. But with the with the big guy, and later when he finds Hyodo hanging out with his gran at home, gran making him do sumo commentary for
sumo
her.
Commentary. That's good stuff.
And then his imagination self at the end when he's.
We turn super handsome and buff. Yes. good stuff.
But it starts punching at himself in the head to stop himself thinking that way.
Yeah. I sort of like the kind of character in his portrait narrative where they're like, you know, this sort of harsh-headed bonehead who's just fun, like learning things for the first time. It's more like this guy has a bit of a drip, but he's got good intentions.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it so far, yeah.
Next up, well, might as well talk about the other thing which reused footage from the previous week. Reflection Episode 2, Survivor. Don't know what it said about Episode 1, that I forgot that this was on our schedules.
Like, you reuse it, but at least they kind of recontextualize it. But yeah, it is pretty kind of lazy.
There's a lot of... the first half of this episode, I was like, I don't want to watch any more of this. Second half, I was like, I want to see more of that guy. Literally, I guy. I like you.
No, he's easily the most interesting part of the show at this fucking stage.
He's BoJack Horseman / David Hasselhoff in Iron Man.
It's like not failed musician, like one-hit wonder musician who's kind of living off the royalties. It does very well in Europe. And it's kind of like, he says like, oh, no, I can't play music since the incident. But what's his superpower? He can build a set of Iron Man suit for himself out of the music?
I think I read on his character page that he has like the supersonic voice thing.
Okay.
Or something to that effect anyway. So obviously you can't sing the high notes because you'll probably kill everybody in the room. So
it's not like he was doing well as a singer is what I'm saying. Still, he's an interesting guy, and the entire like recontextualizing that episode one bit where it's just like, okay, this is his pitch, you know? He has all the guys work in the background. It's like, okay, now change the scene to this. Now, hit time that's just right. Pow! Zap! Okay, it's working really good.
I did like, you know, just like this kind of the cynicism of it all. You know, this guy. It kind of it tied in as well with him saying, like, all right, guy, would you come back to save New York again? It's like, no, I live in LA. And it's like, this is all just like, you know, a big publicity stunt for me.
Yeah, this is his New York promotional tour.
It's all totally calculated out. I won't be back. If you get fucking destroyed by a giant monster, I'd probably be busy in LA doing something else. So sorry.
He scams a ride on an airplane. He's the most fun part of it so far for me. Yeah.
Yeah, because the villains led by Stanley, apparently.
yes. God. yeah.
And Exxon aren't quite as fun. Though I did like the your girl making the pitch to him to be his sidekick, and he's like, no, I'm not feeling it. When you go and then makes her, well, tricks her into researching the Wraith. Whoever the Wraith is.
Yeah. And she's just basically like Google searching it. It's just like fucking, that's one word, dude. That's not really going to help me out.
Yeah.
The thing I got from this, that fucking, oh, sorry, what were you going to say, Mom?
as I say, the way we kind of new context you got for Exxon is that, oh, we see how he got that that big arm power that he used for briefly in episode one.
From that's a kind previously of unconscious yes. guy, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, what a revelation.
And that the villains were apparently wanting to kidnap him for some reason.
Well, it's a pretty good power if he could use all their powers or yes. whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing I keep getting from this is, and especially from whatever that kind of Photoshop flash filter they're using on fucking everything. It looks, and I get it, maybe this is the worst insult you can say everything. It reminds me of like a fucking motion comic where you just get this like still, another fucking still. Oh, and I'm yeah. just like fucking just, if it was a motion comic, perhaps it wouldn't be as bad because it would be, there'd be more going on in a fucking still image. I don't fucking know, dude.
Yeah, it was really hard going at the start. Thankfully, next week it looks like we might have different characters to focus on, so maybe it got some new footage they can make.
Yeah. Are those four Japanese girls that we saw in the first episode and in this one, at the end of this one?
They do turn up. Yeah.
They're an idol group who are superheroes, because I assume that's them dancing in the end credits.
I believe so, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What the hell was I just going to say?
Sorry.
I don't like dislike how it looks. Like I said, I don't mind seeing it move. I said last week, it's something that I love to read probably more than watch, but I don't hate it. It does not hold up in a lot of areas now. And one, I think, unintentionally hilarious moment when you have like what's her face, the journalist, going over like the photos from the thing.
Yeah.
And she does like the zoom and enhance on one of the images from like the parade or thing yes. where I guy turned up, and it's like zooming in on this like corner, and you know, it's still a dot, man.
There's a little black smudge. Shadow. I think it might be a guy. I don't fucking know. I can't make it out.
To be there, in fact, in that sense, that's the most realistic zoom and enhance ever seen in TV.
I guess that's true to that extent. Yeah, yeah. It's like zoom enhance is like, as the audience, I have no idea what you're looking at here. Yeah, I kind of want this to be a lot better than it is. I think it just needs like, I don't know, an editor or someone who can handle the pacing a little better. Because there's parts of it that work really well.
Yeah, it lacks energy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is why I like the iGuy stuff, because that introduced a bunch of characters talking to each other and having a conversation.
Yes, exactly. And it's not like it's a big fucking animated action scene, but it sets up, it's like, oh, that's his deal. It's like, and that, these guys are, you get to see the kind of interplay of him with his, the guys working for him and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And like the studio team and, you know, all the motion yes. graphics guys. It's like, oh, yes, it's all like loading back and stuff.
And that car thief was funny as well, of it looking like he was doing the typical anime. Punching so multiple fast, it looks like he's got multiple arms, and then it turns out he'd had four more arms hidden under his shirt.
Why did you steal a car if you have extra arms? I don't understand his logic, but he doesn't seem to be a very smart dude.
Steal really, really well.
I was saying the eye guy parts are the parts that like work the best, seemingly. I'm not sure if they're handled by two different sides of the same studio or something. I'm not sure.
Righty-ho. Well, I think that's enough of that. Barely touched on the stuff about how they all became superheroes, perhaps because that was the least interesting.
That was so like fucking, and now I am literally fucking giving the exposition.
Yes.
Remember the event? Yes, I remember the event.
That they were all like that. They've called themselves the Reflected, and we call the event the Reflection. And I was like, it doesn't resemble a mirror. Oh, there is one thing about that actually. The eye guy says, I was enveloped in light and got my fucking powers, and I wasn't killed and shit. But the villain says we were enveloped in those enveloped by smoke tend to turn to crime. And I was like, so the bad guys get hit by smoke and the good guys get hit by light? Is it just going to be that fucking? Jeez.
I'm sure there'll be some sort of explanation behind it.
Sure. But that seems very like, and if we flip the coin and it's like, if depending on if it comes up heads or tails, you're good or evil.
Yeah.
If I was some crap like, you know, the Reflection recognized the evil intent within hidden in your heart, so it gave you this instead.
Yeah, okay. That does, makes more sense to the name, all right.
Does feel a bit like somebody's homebrew superhero campaign for a role-playing game.
Yeah.
In part because my homebrew superhero campaign involves stuff falling out the sky, hitting people and turning them into superheroes.
It's kind of more of like an easy thing. Now we don't have to write motivation for these guys because if you get hit by this, that makes them automatically a villain or hero.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's
exactly.
Probably the Wraith has the answer. Anyway, on to Rage of Bahamut, Virgin Soul, episode 17, Virgin Souls. It's the fan service romance, slightly badly animated episode.
But there's a lot of fun costumes.
There are a lot of fun costumes, yes.
Mm.
And perhaps the real villain may be emerging.
Mm.
Or at least a guy who's going to be pushed towards villainhood because one guy is verging away from it.
Yes.
Like, no, nice.
Yes.
Mm. Some good bits, though, like they're getting all... Need to gather some information so the guy get all kind of kitted up and go outside there. And then, like, the Favreau is working away on making stuff. He makes Kaiser a new hand, stuff like that. And then Nina comes into the room, and then Favreau is all like, Nina, how are you, girl? Oh, I'm all topless and sweaty. And he's like, yeah, how are you doing? Hello, Kaiser.
Hi, Nina. Looks away shyly. And he's like, motherfucker, I'm at my hottest right now. Yeah, there's some good play between them, and it's like, this arm's not going to explode, right?
I don't
quite
know.
Trusting him anymore. dear.
Mm. So Nina's, like, you know, in, like, a sort of disguise, just has blue hair and kind of black sort of demon clothing and one red arm.
I think she has a little devil tail as well.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's not as ridiculous as Rita's one, which is fucking hilarious.
The two big devil horns, which are like
I got this in a costume shop. They're like, what it looks like.
Each of them are bigger than your head. How is that not breaking your neck?
We need to mention the best disguise is the duck is wearing a coat.
The duck's wearing a fucking overcoat. It's still wearing a crown, but it's wearing like a little fucking... Where did it even get like a duck-sized coat? I don't know.
Different duck.
And Nina's first disguise was drawing a moustache on her face.
Which was excellent. She should have just stuck with that. Basilio has not attempted to disguise himself at all, which is kind of great as well. Too drunk to care.
Mm. Yeah. And... Nina, she went out and she encounters Chariotche, a.k.a. Chris, at the graveside, you know, and it's revealed that this is his mother's grave. She was, you know, as we suspected, you know, she was like just one of the concubines of the palace. She's an illegitimate heir, and he had to scrape his way to the top to get his rightful inheritance.
Mm. Like, he would have been down the line of descendancy, but the king wanted a son, I assume, to take over, that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of it's besides it becoming like a date where he increasingly takes off more and more of his disguise. It's like, are you sure this is cool? It's like, it'll be fine. It's kind of reveals like why he feels this, why he has these two personalities or disguises to work with. And I guess the him stripping away his disguise is him, like, using Chris as less of a thing and more saying, like, that is me. You know, he doesn't want to be the evil king, but at least that's what it's trying to suggest anyway.
Yeah, it almost feels like when he's, like, being the king, he's sort of playing it, playing it way too extremely.
Yes.
Because we know he has truly, he does have feelings and affection like for Nina, but when like the guy comes in the head of the ninja knight saying, what do we do if we see that red dragon around? He just orders him to kill the red dragon on sight.
Yeah, and this is the same guy we've seen like sitting like fucking your man in Gladiator at the fucking Colosseum watching demons kill each other. And it's like, oh, the demon kids have lost their football. I'll make them a new one, you know, kind of thing. And it seems really dissonant.
This is the guy who's like, you know, like actively enslaved and forced you to live in this slum, literally a crater on the edge of the city.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure he's actively enslaved anybody. I think he's just turned a blind eye to the people who are enslaving
Yeah, he's playing up to what's expected of the fucking king to some extent, yes. I think. Or what's expected of a ruler, like to be ruthless and no one will question him, that kind of thing.
But yeah, he's being followed by his ninjas, and supposedly Favreau is following Nina, but I don't think we see him, do we? So maybe he's does a better job at following than the ninja knights do.
Maybe his disguise is amazing.
Also, meanwhile in heaven...
Yeah.
Jean throws herself off.
Yeah, because she's like, you're an angel and you catch people, so you're just good that way.
Yes.
If you've read the Bible, you're not supposed to do that, but obviously this is a very different circumstance. Yeah, it was kind of nice her kind of working out, because obviously Sophiel is you can see kind of like they have a rapport, and it's a weird thing where she believes in the gods and that specific god believes in her, kind of thing, which is quite nice. Yeah,
and we also see Gabrielle beginning to lose her temper, which makes me wonder if she's going to fall at some point. Because obviously we've got Lucifer back, he's not like the other demons. He was an angel who fell. So, yeah, I wonder if that's going to happen to Gabrielle by the end.
She's the highest authority, though, that we know of.
But we know somewhere Michael's spirit is about, because he impregnated Jean.
Yes.
Yeah, she might have, like, done a similar thing over, like, I'm in charge of heaven now kind of thing, and ousted him or something.
And, so a kiss from a prince or a king gets Nina's turning into a red dragon under control.
Yeah, she now has the ability to turn it on and off because it's the controlled passion, I guess.
Yes.
Mm.
And then they go flying around having a good old time. And then we see the leader of the knights going, he's under the spell of the red dragon.
Yeah, it's so like fucking they're flying around and people looking up, oh my god, it's amazing, beautiful. Not like holy shit, a dragon, but it's kind of like a whole new world. And then it's just like, yeah, the king's fucking compromised.
True like, oh, love, not on my watch.
Yeah.
We got a world to destroy or slash save, but save it by partially destroying it. We're not sure.
Yeah, because they're after the amulet off the king, because Rita realized that's controlling the weapon. So if they get a hold of that, they can stop him using the weapon. But of course, we don't actually know exactly what he wants to use the weapon for.
Yeah.
Whether there's a perfectly good reason. And apparently he's going to tell Nina the full story next time he sees her.
But yeah, will they be on the same side?
They might well be at that point, yes, because he might be on the run.
It looks like it's going that way, but that's the implication, all right.
He's the only one who hasn't been thrown in prison yet. Well, him and Rita, so.
Yeah, but like, Nina says, no, that whatever happens, she's gonna get him out of there. She's gonna like help him get through this. Well, she says that, but the reality maybe a lot.
I generally think that, but her boundless optimism and ability to fucking get shit done is kind of put me on her side. I was like, yeah, Nina will sort this out. Somehow, I hope.
We shall see. On to My Hero Academia, episode 30, Climax. Which is the end of the fight between our heroes and Stain. And also Stain and the League of Villains, as it turns out by the end.
Yeah, it kind of shows, if you weren't sure where his philosophy lied before, like it pretty much makes it clear.
Yes.
He's not on the villain side, but he is a murderer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He might have a point, but he's probably going the wrong way of making it.
Yeah.
I do like it all. These professional heroes have been in business for a long time, and he's like impressionable kids, and they've been brought up thinking it's just a black and white issue. But saying, no, here's some guy who doesn't fit into either of the boxes, really. He's definitely a killer, but he doesn't really kind of fit neatly into your Pikachu notions. So it's like, well, just kind of thinking, there's more than two ways to look at this thing. I had not considered that before.
Yeah, and he's definitely a guy who obviously believes in heroism. It's just like, doesn't feel the need to do that himself.
Yes.
Which is, again, well, similar to our characters.
Except, of course, when Midoriya gets taken away by Anomu, and he's the only one who acts. Everyone else just stands around going, oh, my kid's been taken.
Yeah.
Tied up and stops the monster.
Hmm.
That's kind of it. Like, you know, he's a guy who acts. Everybody else, you know, talks a big game. He talks a lot as well, but like, he is actually acting on his beliefs. It's brought him to do horrendous, murderous things, but he's acting on why his beliefs are and why he believes is right. And occasionally that can work out.
And then he falls unconscious standing up after doing a speech. Just further drives his point home even further, even though it's a punctured lung.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the kind of thing of he stopped all the heroes in his tracks just by spouting his kind of philosophy at them.
Yes.
Not a power, more so just fucking terrifying the shit out of people.
Before we get all that, though, they managed to beat him.
And it's pretty sweet.
Yes.
And get a kind of fun tiger's fangs type of job there. They just crushed from two sides at once.
Yeah, yeah, I could see.
Is there anything else to add in that? We get all the pro heroes show up.
You get Ida kind of like coming to terms with why he's gone the way he's gone, or questioning that and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's some nice bits there where he's looking at about to, he's talking to his brother, and it's like, you know, oh, well, like Big Brother is like a great hero, might be just like you. And it's like, oh, well, no, anyway, I can't get into this, you know, like a little while ago, and where I'm at now, like you're like a lot, like, fitter and more able than I was at your age. So if you're saying that, you know, then I must be pretty good, but you would be even better than me. So, you know.
Yeah, his thing of like, well, you know, dad was a hero and the grandparents were heroes, so I'm just following the family business. But if you believe in me, well, I can probably do something. And I was thinking to myself again, like, I remember thinking of when I was reading it, is like, is that why he wasn't killed outright, you know? By Stain, is just like, okay, you're not worth killing because there's some fucking thing of good in him, even though he's not entirely heroic, because obviously he's doing it because it's family tradition, or that seems to be the reason of it. Yeah,
yeah, possibly, or it was just like the other guy, a lure to bring other heroes.
Yeah, yeah, that could be it as well.
Like, from the previous episodes, it does seem to be like there's a method to his madness of he's not going to stick around forever and kill all the heroes in one area. He's just doesn't know.
He doesn't even want to kill all the heroes. Nah. He wants to inspire them to do fucking better. Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like?
Inspire, for lack of a better term.
like crime rates go down whenever he kills in the areas where he kills people. So
yeah.
The numbers are on his side.
Yeah. So Gran Torino tells Midoriya off for leaving the train.
He also recognizes, what's his name? Endeavor doesn't, like, he keeps calling him Honored Elder.
Yes.
But Gran Torino's calling him Todoroki, because it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I know fucking everyone in the biz. I've been around forever. But nobody seems to know who he is, which is still kind of weird, considering how fucking tough he is.
Yeah, I think we get that explained shortly, possibly the next episode or so. Mm. Possibly when next time he has a sit down with All Might. I think this is where we get a little bit of a flashback where we see Todoroki Jr. telling his dad to, as soon as you're done here, come to this location and bring every other pro hero you can find.
Yeah, he has the sense to shout that out as he's running the opposite direction.
No, it's just want to show along that I'm not going along with whatever you're doing, Dad. I got, you know, got my own heroing to do on the other side of town.
And he's sticking by his friends and the people he trusts and that kind of thing. He's only with his dad because his dad has experience in the heroing business.
Yeah, like, I gotta stand out from you. I gotta do this my own way. You know, like I'm gonna stick around with you as long as you're useful to me. I mean, that's just it. I'm gonna be very pragmatic about this. I don't want to be like you. I don't want to do what you do. I want to do my own things my own way for the people I care about. Which is not you, by the way.
Yeah.
It brings up a lot of the stuff with a lot of people are going like, well, Stain's power actually isn't that great. So it kind of shows you, like, yeah, if you rely entirely on your power, you're kind of screwed. But it's your extra stuff that you do on top of that and how you use the powers. Like, I thought it was really nice to see Endeavor, like, just do some crazy shit, like the running up the building bit. I was like, was that on the freaking manga? I do not remember that. That was sweet.
Well, that's pretty cool, yeah. It's melting the concrete.
Superheating his feet, yeah, yeah.
Make foot holes for himself, yeah.
Grant's reading it, they just have to stop him from incinerating unconscious state at the end.
It's like, yeah, that's true. It's like, he's down.
He's down. He just saved Midoriya. And also Midoriya's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so next week it's the fallout from all of this, and technically I think the remaining series is kind of dealing with the fallout as well.
Like, yeah. you were right, I mean, the episode is literally titled Fallout from Stain or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that the show does that, though, you know, it gives you the time to react to stuff. Obviously the first season didn't get as much of that, but... because it ended on the high note. But I'm liking this, what this season's doing. Of like, it's like, okay, big thing happens, and then let's deal with the repercussions of that.
Yeah, and it's kind of like having the scales fall from Midoriya's eyes a bit.
Yeah.
About his idealism about how heroes work. Some more of that will happen next episode. Yeah, it's a great series. I've noticed there's a new free spin-off comic going to be on Shonen Jump. Website.
Oh, yeah, the Vigilante.
Yes, yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
So I'll have to remember to check that out, because I always forget to look at the free stuff. I read the stuff I'm paying for, but not the free stuff.
That's being done by, like, different, like, artists and writer, is it? Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, yeah, if you had to do fucking two comics.
Yes,
that'd be rough.
You had to take a week off ill for doing one.
Yeah, unsurprising the way the schedule is.
Righto. Bonus, Children of Ether. Original digital animation. Did we all watch this?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was okay.
I thought it was quite good.
It's pretty all right, like.
It's definitely a pilot.
Yeah.
Sure. I did like the... What was it, like freaking 13, 14 minutes long or something?
Yeah.
I felt like it fit a lot in there without feeling overstuffed. I did enjoy the pace of it and the kind of setup. But seems interesting enough.
Yeah, I did feel like the most interesting thing was the tease at the end, though.
Sure, that gives you, like, because it's very small scale or, like, scaled down, and then you kind of see the full extent of what the world is. And that does interest me, yeah.
They've announced his new LaShawn Thomas's other things coming to Netflix, isn't it?
Cannonbusters.
Cannonbusters?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
That was today. Yeah.
That's good. I'd love to see one of those things picked up. I like his work.
Yeah. Like, Cannonbusters, there's a lot more. It's like, here's all my anime stuff that I like. This blurs across the entire screen. Just a bit more... A little bit like that, but it's a bit more kind of focused. You know, it has this stuff.
Yeah. There's some kind of weird superpower thing and post-apocalypse kind of world. But it seems this one, Children of Ether, is a lot more built up. But Cannonbusters is just like friggin' balls to the wall. Everything I love.
Got robots and samurais and ninjas and all this sort of crap. Well, okay.
It's pretty fun. But I quite enjoyed this. I'd love to see more.
It does feel like, you know, it was kind of a flying visit through this world. You're going to see all these different factions too. You'll be seeing them for a couple of minutes. We'll obviously get back to all these guys later.
Sure.
I like it for them, which I was getting a lot of people. Again, like a big Michiko and Hatchin type of vibe, but that's probably because they got Hiroshi Shimizu in to do work on it as well. So that's probably it. It's all right. On Secret Center Matters, we did like a pilot potluck episode there not long ago, which was another thing, by Yappico Animation, the Urbance pilot that came out there a couple of years back, or last year even. And comparatively, where that was, that looked good, but it's sort of what I was going for was all over the map. Like,
yeah. This is a lot more focused and well defined, I think.
yeah, I get the idea of what's going for. Like, you know, you could say this is sort of, no, it could be seen a little bit kind of boilerplate, or at least as far as kind of this kind of story goes. But well, you know, that's a good starting point with seeing what they can develop out of that. But it seems a lot more kind of composed than that did.
Yeah, definitely.
Righty ho, on to our penultimate show of the night. Dragon Ball Super, episode 101, The Impending Warriors of Justice, The Pride Troopers. In which Goku stands around while other better people deal with the bad guys.
Well, he keeps walking up to people and is like, let's fight, let's do it. Fight me.
No. Not going to.
So Jiren sends 5 of his Pride Troopers after Goku, and also the Cauliflower and Kale.
And Android 17 and 18 get into the mix too.
Yes, they show up to help.
To make it even, because initially the Pride Troopers are, 5 against 3 seems hardly fair. And the Androids are like, all right, let's do it. Which was great.
And for their efforts, they all get eliminated.
Yeah. And I was looking up, like, on the... I couldn't figure out the universe theme, and it's kitchen appliances, I think.
I got kettle.
Yeah, and yeah, Tupper, you're right. Tupper for Tupperware. That's what I thought as well, yeah. But I'm sure, so the guys in this episode are Casserole, who we've met before. That's the cyborg in a beret.
Oh, casserole dish.
Casserole. It's obvious when you see it written down.
Zoe Ray, who's the little Batmite-looking guy.
I think it's like, it's the word fridge, but like the syllables have been inverted or something.
Okay. Yeah.
In Japanese, I mean.
Yeah. Kettle.
Yeah, Kettle.
Who's the green alien.
Little fish man thing.
Coquette, the dimensional illusionist, who's the purple woman, and Tupper, who is a blue gravity man,
who grows like a big face on him as well,
like a blue pumpkin head.
None of them are eliminated by Goku.
That's good. Goku isn't the only guy in this fight. There's like we're down a bit now, but there's like 50 other guys out there who could be taking these guys out of stage too. So nice to see the focus diverting on to other ones. And seeing some more of the Universe 6 Saiyans is nice as well.
Oh, there were some other people eliminated as well during this. The Preacho from Universe 3 was eliminated by Roshi and Tien.
That guy looked pretty cool, actually. I'm sorry to see him getting knocked out.
He was
the guy. Yeah, he looked kind of like a Cell-looking thing on him. Yeah.
Cell, but a ninja.
yeah.
And who else? Oh, and our friend, the leader of the muscle guys from Universe 10, Marichim, was eliminated by Frieza.
I did like Vegeta acting, so Childish was like, hey, that guy's mine.
it's not a point system, Vegeta. This is the one who survives.
Yeah, so those two are off fighting over who gets to eliminate people. Gohan's trying to get the sensible people all back together again in one spot.
Yeah, they've all been kind of separated a bit. Yeah, and they're just trying to keep tabs on where everyone is.
Goku's wandering up to people demanding that they fight him.
not getting any as well, which is the best.
And 17 and 18 are actually being useful.
Yep, they're kicking ass together. They're doing that kind of combo stuff that they did so well.
Yes,
back in the day. I for some reason keep forgetting. It's like, oh yeah, these guys were made to kill Goku. They're pretty great in tandem.
Yes.
Yeah. There was like a line dropped a few episodes back as well that because they're androids, they've like infinite stamina, so they won't get tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also couldn't detect them either.
Exactly.
Same reason, I guess. Yeah.
There's one line from Vermood, the clown god of destruction, about how Casserole has apparently conquered many planets, which made me think, how much are good guys? I mean, maybe it's supposed to be liberated rather than, because they do seem to be what we've seen of him in their universe. He's great because he refused to come and help out until he'd rescued that cat.
Well, maybe they like take over plan and goes like, okay, you're under our fucking jurisdiction now, kind of thing. Yes. And then life is pretty good under yes. their jurisdiction, but maybe there is an initial problem with it. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, they get fucking drummed out of the fucking yes. thing anyway.
And the other mistake they make is they accidentally get Kale to take control of her legendary Super Saiyan powers.
They assume it's like, well, she just changed her hair color. It's fine. It's like, guys, do some research about Saiyans.
What have we not seen? I mean, if it goes from black to yellow, you're in trouble. If it goes from yellow to blue, you're in super big trouble.
If it goes from yellow to any other color, you're fucked.
If it goes to red, you're screwed.
yeah. Green is obviously the worst one you want, but
it's like you guys are in the military or a military S force. You should know what threat level warnings look like. Come on.
Yeah, pretty much. And that, and the Kale discovers her true strength with self-loathing, which was kind of like, that's kind of sucks.
Still emotion.
Yeah.
Yes,
but they were super good.
Yeah, Coquette's power is to lock people into another dimension, which is what she does with Kale. And then, because she sees Cauliflower getting beaten on and Goku can't get in to help her, it forces her to burst out of this other dimension.
Oh, that's when it's inside another dimension, yes. which no one else can interfere with.
Yes.
That seems like a pretty good power until, obviously, you know, 18 just picks her up, picks her dimension up that yeah. she's in and throws it.
Throws it off the side. Oh, like, I love when 18 in this one, because she's just being completely so ruthless. Great. Like, Goku's in trouble, is getting held down by Topper, and then he's getting his stomach broken over by the little Batmite guy. 18 shows up, he's got, like, one hand in her pocket, and she just starts hosing down the Topper guy with lasers, and saying, get off him, come on. What? Yeah. You can't, like, just, I'm sick of this shit. Goku, you shoot them too, okay? Blam, blam, blam.
Yeah, just taking charge, it's pretty great.
So Tupper, she rolls Tupper, he reaches the edge of the arena, thinks he's safe, and then the arena collapses below him.
Because he's too heavy.
And then that really distresses Voiray. But yeah, in the end, so Kale and Cauliflower eliminate Casserole, Voiray, and Kettle. Coquette, thinks she's escaped by going to another dimension, as you say. 18 just then picks the dimension up and hurls it over the edge. And then the mood's like, what the hell? You're supposed to be
like. Like, Pride Trooper is one of the favorites going into this thing. I've just been decimated.
There's only four of them left.
Yeah, I think that Jiren's probably carrying for a lot of them.
Yeah. And we know Toppo fought Goku to a draw as well, so.
That's true. Yeah.
Enough of those guys. Now to bring on the real good fighters.
Yeah,
the magical
much.
Girls of Universe 2.
What was the deal with that ending thing? It's like, who could this mysterious fighter be? It's like, it's that character. You've shown this character before. Oh, look, you've taken her face out of shadow. We know who it is.
But we don't know yet that they're called the Kamikaze Fireballs.
Oh, what a great name.
Cool.
I was surprised they eliminated so many of those Pride Troopers at once. But I was really pleased that they did, because it made me think maybe this arc isn't going to go on as long as I thought it would.
That's my only complaint about this thing. I'm like, come on, tournament, just move along now. They even have a bit where Kale and frickin' Cauliflower are kind of like, hey, you sure you're okay with us going away injured? It's like, I'll fight you guys later. I was like, you have 45 minutes.
I'll see you later, in a little while.
This was probably only 2 minutes.
In 20 minutes. So. Yeah.
It felt like 2 minutes at a rate that we're blitzing through these guys.
I think we get a really good overhead shot now of what the arena looks like as well, and it is absolutely fucking wrecked.
I'm wondering, is there going to be like huge chunks of it gone at the end?
Because that thing comes down, doesn't it, slowly, and it winds itself off. So I imagine some of that debris is going to get either knocked down further or sliced off.
Yeah, okay. It's just like, you know, like Kale just rolling down some words last week that it's caused like geological changes in this like small arena floating in the void dimension.
Yeah.
And then finally on to the best show of the week.
Oh my goodness.
Vatican Miracle Examiner, episode 4. Even so, I still believe in the Lord God.
I was thinking to myself, what was my favorites this week? I liked Children of Aether. I thought it was a good pitch. Dragon Ball was pretty good. My Hero Academia, an excellent climax. But it's like, it's Vatican Miracle Examiners, easily, right?
It is.
Just,
ridiculous. How is this show so fucking crazy?
Because initially I was just like, oh, it's Hitler's sperm, and I didn't think of the extent of it, you know?
It's like, whoa, back up, man. Back up, there, science boy.
So the first half of the episode is our two heroes leaping through an amazing amount of clues really quickly.
Yeah. Oh, God, any other anime would spend so long on these individual little fucking bits. So the death guy, the guy dressed as Death with the knife, he didn't stab James. Anyone. He was shot in the head from a mysterious man off the screen.
Who we later learn was essentially, our heroes didn't need to do anything. That guy would have
This shit was going to be sorted anyway.
Yes. They were just a handy distraction for the guy who was actually sorting things out.
And I guess he didn't really care about the murders, because it's like, oh no, they're murdering fucking the ex-Nazis.
Oh, we did, because
two of his guys got killed.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess they distracted him enough to set bombs everywhere.
Yeah, so I guess that they were distractions to prevent him from getting assassinated, possibly.
Hmm.
Yeah, because I was like, whoa, when all those bombs went off, I was like, where did they come from?
Why did everything explode? Yeah.
It's okay. Vatican secret police. One secret spy squad. Here
he's not from the Vatican. He's from Israel.
One of those guys called the Nazi hunter kind of guys.
I can't remember what organization name they give them here, but yes.
But that kind of thing,
So what was happening here was these Nazis escaped Germany with Vatican's help at the end of World War II, complete with Hitler's corpse. They preserved his sperm, and they're trying to bring...
Well, they preserved his entire body, so obviously they preserved his sperm, as they cleverly explain.
As a priest and a scientist, I know. Hit his body, preserve him from ice, can preserve all these other things too. So they then set up this school as a front to basically have kids enrolled there and brainwash them to form a new Hitler youth and
also to sell drugs.
Also to sell drugs.
To fund their evil organization and to pay off the Vatican.
Yes. Well, no, they're money laundering it through the Vatican.
Oh, they're money laundering it through the Vatican. You're right. Yeah.
Which is a rip from the headlines thing, because that...
Yeah.
This is all a setup, and a Fourth Reich, which will be led by the new descendant of Hitler, which we will do by inseminating women with his frozen sperm, and the baby will grow up and to be our new Führer, and... Especially because he has Hitler's DNA inside of him. Of course, he will naturally turn evil, or a dual personality, but one of them is evil.
Well, no, they're brainwashing.
But it's weird, he didn't turn out evil.
Yeah, that's
it's weird, he didn't turn out evil, so we have to introduce the brainwashing thing. Yes. Yeah.
Because they were doing VR brainwashing at this place as well.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention that they're using VR headsets.
Yes.
Yeah.
and also that Mikael Brown, the priest who's corpses.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There's Heinrich Müller.
Yep.
Real life
Nazi. The one
Nazi.
Guy they didn't fucking catch. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, not the one guy, but yeah. One
well,
of
I think
guys,
it was the main one who escaped trial and never found his body. Then also, he tries to exorcise him when he's possessed by Hitler's spirit, or has convinced himself he is Hitler, and then throws holy water on him, which burns him. And then you're like, what? And then it turns out he swapped his holy water out with sulfuric acid, just in case.
Of course.
Like, okay, right, sulfuric acid. He swapped it out. Okay, just in case. Okay, sulfuric acid doesn't set people on fire. And then it initially looks like the sulfuric acid blew up the entire facility, at least that was explained, yeah.
I think it was blessed acid, we'll do that.
I think it was just chemical burns, not actual fire that he had on his face when he came back.
He was on fire, in the middle of that friggin' satanic mass they were doing.
Possibly.
Well, wasn't there a torches and things, and one kind of got knocked over in the scuffle and the person fire?
Or he could have reacted with the drugs he'd been taking.
There's a perfectly reasonable explanation that if we Vatican science this out, we'll get it. Yeah, sure.
And also apparently the drugs had some sort of hallucinatory effect as well.
And they zombify the entire congregation.
Yes. Which could be controlled by the noise which was coming in through the speakers.
Yeah.
Yes. Because they put it into the water supply. Luckily, we'll be taking this antidote just in case. Like, just have this ended up with
like, particular... like, you knew this all fucking ready. And I'm like, wait, hold the fucking phone.
Yes. You just knew that water was poisoned with or spiked with drugs. You just happened to have this antidote on your person. We're just such an eventuality.
My favorite when the entire place is on fire and exploding and they're getting out of there and they're kind of out there. It's like, whoa, I hope the nuns got out. I was like, what the fuck, guys?
Oh, yeah, I gotta get stabbed in the head with a pair of scissors as well.
Yeah, because we got to finish off the martyrs. you forgot about that one, didn't you? No. fucking hell.
It's a fucking amazing show. It's like, how could it top this with the next arc?
That's it, though. We've already come to secret Hitler babies running drugs and trying to set up a new empire with like,
Satanists.
With the Vatican. Have they peaked too soon? Have they peaked too soon?
Well, yes. I don't. This season we won't get the English vampire or the Norwegian ice wolf.
That's probably for the best, because, you know, take the time you need, which is apparently is fuck all time in terms of this show, to do those episodes.
Yes, I believe we go to Africa next and then to Italy.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, like, if it can be half as good as these things, it's
well, we know from the opening credits that there's a murderous clown awaiting for us at some point.
Okay. I mean, like, that doesn't seem as good as Hitler, but, I mean, Hitler, alien, fucking Nazi, drug runner, Satanist, but I don't know, maybe they'll combine it with a bunch of other things and make
well,
it great.
The next arc apparently is called Satan's Judgment, and then right. Golden Darkness is the third arc. I'm guessing from the opening credits that's all we get this season. Okay.
What a fucking like a fucking dark horse this show is. Just came out of fucking nowhere.
Yes. I'm really happy that Niall suggested that we should watch it. I thought jokingly,
it sounded like that's an interesting fucking setup. I didn't think it was going to be fucking insane.
Because I'd watched the trailer. The trailer looked really good. But like in terms of production and how the trailer was cut. And then Niall said we should watch it as well. I was like, okay, that's two of us are in. That's excellent. It's
garbage, but it's entertaining garbage.
Yes.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah, no, it's the dumbest fucking thing. The blimp was still in the facility when it exploded. Sorry, the Zeppelin. I need to go with the proper fucking terms here. Jesus fucking Christ. Like, yeah. The Nazis were mistaken for aliens, but they're actually drug-running Satanists who are using science to clone Hitler's baby. And I'm like, fucking show? Why are you doing everything at once? But yeah, that's what kind of makes it so great.
Yeah, and they make the point of like saying, oh, because the other nun is still pregnant with Hitler's baby.
Oh, I love the way your man turns around and is like, hey, it's just a baby. Yeah. It's not necessarily going to be evil.
Yeah, he's going to be raised.
But your other guy turned out evil, so...
Well, they brainwashed him to be evil. Yeah, they specifically say it's like, we were the priest is like, we were looking for a sign of some of your fucking skills or whatever... Where he puts it, but none of it was shown, so we'd brainwashed the shit out of all the fucking children.
Yes, because they were raising him to be a new Hitler, whereas presumably the other baby would not be raised to be a new Hitler.
Like, how the fuck did they manage to get back to the Vatican after saying to the police, well, obviously I fucking threw sulfuric acid on the brainwashed child, and that solved the crime.
Yeah, see, I thought the other character who hasn't shown up yet was going to be involved because they've got an FBI agent
to cover it up or
later
something.
On.
Yeah.
Who I believe is in the credits, so I assume he will show up eventually. yeah, and then their boss is like, okay, this is a lot to take in. How's your faith feeling? And he hints that something happened to him similar in his past that he had to deal with.
So yes, drug dealing Nazis. Take me back.
we've all been there, or in at least in a similar situation. And he doesn't seem that perturbed about it. It's like, this goes to the fucking highest things in the Vatican. Well, obviously your man's not going to be promoted to cardinal now.
He's going to wait for a long time. Good work, boys.
God. Yeah, I really love this show.
I thought it was going to be like... It's something online because well, maybe interested to watch it. Like, well, we could be like the X-Files, but with priests, so that could be an interesting sort of thing. But instead, it's just going this full pulp adventure, throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. Most of it does. it's a complete mess, but it's
like one of the two priests whose job is to fucking like say that's actually not a miracle that can be explained away by shit. Like, kind of goes to your man at the end. Is like, wow, I guess he really was a demon because he set on fire when you threw that holy water at him. Like, he was just fucking taken in straight away.
It's like, and then to say, I should believe in God, even though I had this backup. It's like, if you believe in God, then you wouldn't, you just come up straight up water, wouldn't you?
Well, just to make sure, if it is Satan, yes, I might as well throw sulfuric acid on him.
Yeah, I think necessarily he believes in God, but he wasn't necessarily, at this point, necessarily believing it was demons involved.
I believe just in God, but I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, well, also they kept the two-headed baby who died.
They keep everything in this fucking place. How were they not discovered? All the evidence was there. They kept the fucking Zeppelin.
You never know when you're going to need one.
Kept your mass preserved body. Watch us away. Could be useful someday.
Well, I don't know what use you're going to get out of a two-headed baby mummy thing. But yeah, sure. Good show.
Good stuff. Righty-ho, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. But before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Oh, if you go there right now, we can have our long-awaited show with Martin Schneider back again, talk about the Road to El Dorado. By getting the three people on this planet we may have that level of affection for. But hey, whatever. And coming up soon, it'll be Halloween in August because it'll be talking about Netflix Castlevania.
Good. On Dynamite in the Brain, next week we have the all-purpose pre-recorded convention commentary, which I think will probably be about 2.5 hours plus of me and Anthony explaining how to do a convention, how to behave when you're at a convention, what to do.
Oh, convention etiquette.
Yes. The event is definitely a generic. It's definitely not about KidCon. It's definitely a generic.
Oh. You should have recorded it like, you know, like this little blank stitch. You can go, so if you're going to KidCon, you should go to this event.
So look forward to that. And also, last week we did My Neighbor Totoro with Grace Chan, where we got into all sorts of things. We also talked about Genocidal Organ, because she actually went to see it, and we failed to. In short, don't go and see Genocidal Organ. Right, goodbye. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Aloha.